If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
After our winemaker, Edouard Guérin, makes some blends with a different terroir, so different grapes, and once the blend is completed, it's going to be aged in some dedicated tank. So it can be a very big oak barrel, it can be a cone-shaped wooden tank, and after 6 to 12 months, we do the final blend, myself and Edouard, our winemaker, before the bottling.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 589. This week we feature Francois McHale, General Director of Maison Auger, Rhone Valley, France. Rhone wines can be a very important experience in a wine education. White wine that can age from this area are often a great eye-opener. Francois McHale is General Director of Maison Auger, and he took the time out to chat via phone back in February. When it comes to harvest, their website quotes, "the diary of an adventure." But then again, all wine is an adventure, isn't it? Today we are on the phone. We're speaking to Francois McHale in France, and he is the specialist in Rhone wines and the general director of Maison Auger. Francois, good morning. Thank you for the time.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Very good morning from the Rhone Valley.
Well, the main thing we're going to be talking about today is Rhone wines. A wine for me that I've loved for many, many years, but I think for some people, especially Americans, might be a little bit of a mystery. How would you, in the simplest way, describe Rhone wines for American wine drinkers?
Rhone is a unique region in France because it's so spread from south to north. You know, it's almost 150 miles from Avignon up to Côte-Rôtie. So it's a unique area in France. And so Rhone is not Rhone. Rhone is Northern Rhone and Southern Rhone. As you know, we have two very different regions. Northern Rhone is famous, especially in the U.S., to be the kingdom of the Syrah for the reds and Viognier for the white. And the Southern Rhone is more dedicated to blends, and the main grape is the Grenache. So I would say the Northern Rhone wine are more for connoisseurs, for those who like the freshness, who like the earthiness from the Syrah. When the Côte du Rhône and the other Southern Rhone cru grows, offer a wide diversity of taste, but really into the juiciness, which is characteristic from the Grenache. You know? So I think in the Rhône, you can find all type of wine, even if Rhône is always seen as one region. I think it's different offer, and also Côte du Rhône can be compared to the Bourgogne from Burgundy. You know, it's like a regional appellation, so it can be, it can come from many places. And Côte du Rhône, we have the chance to have this appellation being like a brand. You know, you don't have any retail shop or almost no restaurant within the whole country in the U.S. You always find Côte du Rhône on the list or on the shelves.
Yeah, it's a very easy area to find wines you can like, more diverse than most people realize. Let's talk a little bit about you first before we go into the wines in any more detail, Francois. Like many people I ask, were you born into a winemaking family? Was this something you came into as time? What about your career in wine?
No, I'm not born in a wine family. I had this passion, and I decided to after a science university, I decided to apply to the oenologist diploma that I got in Montpellier. And after oenology school, I moved to a business school in Dijon, in Burgundy. So I had, let's say, the two background, technical and sales and marketing. And I started my career in Languedoc with a guy called Gérard Bertrand, which is now a very famous brand in the U.S. I spent 11 years in Languedoc, and I moved to the Rhône Valley to become general manager of Augier in July 2013. And so since more than 10 years, I'm in the Rhône Valley, and I'm quite invested in Interrhône as well. So I'm vice president of the Negos, and I have a few positions within Interrhône. So I'm quite involved for my company, but also for the whole Rhône Valley region.
I was looking through your website, and you do have an excellent website. One thing I enjoyed the most under some of the basic descriptions were sort of little subtitles. For example, Code of Good Conduct. What does that relate to?
I'm not sure it's well translated or not, but I've got it. We call it Brevet de Bonne Conduite. It's a bit poetic, let's say. Huh?
Right.
It's a bit poetic, I've got it in English, this brand is mainly dedicated to the on-premise market, you know, and as you know, wine Code of Good Conduct. Yeah. It's really translated from French into English, you know, but from French Code of Good Conduct means like the code to be a good winemaker. You know, it has a kind of sense of humor. It's just to be different and to give more focus to the work than our guy do in the vineyard, you know. This is also what we want to do. We really want to focus a lot on what we do in the vines, in the cellar, of course, and then to talk about the wine. But viticulture is definitely the most important.
Yeah, and it is. It's very poetic, and I'm going to just take this one step further. Under Harvest, it's the diary of an adventure, and it really is. Harvest is an adventure every year because you really don't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. No, never. It's always different, and if you want to change things, you need, you know, it's a one shot. You know, we have one try per year. So if you fail, you have to wait for another year to have a second chance. So it's also part of the adventure. You need to be patient. You need to have a vision. You need to try not to make too many mistakes. Otherwise, it's difficult to improve yourself.
Interesting, yeah. And one thing you don't want to do is make mistakes, that's for sure. For your involvement at the winery, are you actively involved in Harvest? Are you involved with any blending?
Augier, you know, it's a Negos company, so we buy some of the wine we use for our blends, and we also buy a lot of grapes. You know, we have partnerships, and we do supervise the viticulture, the picking, and we do the vinification in our cellar. So we are, not myself, but I have a team who is in charge to pick up some of the grapes that we buy, and after our winemaker Edouard Guérin makes some blends with a different terroirs, the different grapes, and once the blend is completed, it's going to be aged in some dedicated tank. So it can be a very big oak barrel, it can be a cone-shaped wooden tanks, and after 6 to 12 months, we do the final blend, myself and Edouard, our winemaker, before the bottling. This is the way we work. We try really to blend different grapes and different terroirs, different soil types. And once the blend is completed, it's going to be aged in the different vats. If you have a look to the aging part, you go to the bottom and you have all of the different tanks and barrels that we have in the cellar, you know.
Well, let's talk about 2023, now that that's pretty much put to bed for everybody. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're in January at this particular point, heading into February. How was your growing season over there?
2023 has been a very good vintage. First of all, the winter was rainy. We had a nice spring, so no problem of leaking or with the flowering season. And we have some rain almost every month, May, June, July, August, early September. Then the rain has stopped for 6 weeks, and we had enough time to pick the grapes. So it was a kind of easy vintage, no pressure. But 23, to be very short, is a great vintage because we have quantity and quality. And this is not every year we can get this this balance, the quantity and the quality. So we are really happy about the wines.
Very good. That's good to hear.
Nice.
We want to talk about whites very specifically. And I think, again, I refer to Americans, which is a good part of our audience, is that some people over in this country really don't appreciate the idea that whites can be aged. Tell me a little bit about that, if you can.
First of all, you know, I'm president for economy in Enteron, so I know a few of the numbers. And what I can tell you is globally, if you take total sales of the Rhone Valley, white has grown by plus 20% during the past 5 years, plus 20%. So it's a real trend, you know. The white is growing in the Rhone Valley. I think in the Rhone Valley, we have a potential to produce great white wine. So because we have some fantastic soil, you can get a lot of minerality. And also we have a wide diversity of grapes. So we can make wine which can be drunk very young, and we can make wine, we can also be aged 10 or 15 years without any problem. It's just a question of blend and, of course, a question of terroir and winemaking techniques. But we have the potential to develop and to have a larger range of white coming into the market in the future. So we are all optimistic about white wine potential. Finally, we have more room to develop than for the rosé, where it's kind of tricky to fight with the Provence or other rosé region.
Interesting. In your career in the wine business, I'm sure you've learned many, many, many things, but is there kind of one lesson you've learned that stands out in your head, sort of as a primary lesson, something to always keep with, other than obviously quality?
I think in the wine industry, it's important to have a long-term vision, you know, to think 10, 20, 30 years in advance. But from 1 year to the other, we it's important also to be patient and not to want things to move, you know, immediately or very quickly. Otherwise, if you have too much in advance, you fail. You know, will not achieve your goal. So vision, long-term vision, and short-term ambition, you know?
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah. And the short-term has to be, of course, in line with the long-term vision, huh? But it's important. Wine is an industry you cannot be drastic, you know, you cannot move everything from 1 year to the other.
Absolutely. Obviously, there's a great deal of talk about climate change within the industry. How do you see that affecting the future of wine growing in France, especially in the Rhone area?
In the Rhone, we have the chance to have a lot of Grenache. I'm talking about the Southern Rhone, but Grenache is quite well adapted to get a lot of heat. You know, to do this global warming, it's easier to produce a Grenache than a Syrah or a Pinot Noir. But the bad effect is the alcohol content in the wine is growing. So and it's difficult to decide about harvesting just because of the sugar content in the grapes, you know, so, which means the alcohol potential. The most important, as you know, is what we call the polyphenolic maturity, so the maturity of the tannins. You know, if you don't wait to reach the optimal tannin maturity, you will never get a nice wine and a well-balanced wine in the bottle. So we need to deal with this alcohol, but sometimes 15.5% alcohol, if you don't see the back label, you cannot taste the alcohol content, you know, because it's well balanced, because it's easy drinking. But this could be an issue in 10 to 20 years, maybe. But for now, we can still manage about this, but the alcohol is growing, as it's growing in Burgundy, as it's growing in Languedoc, as it's growing in the Northern Rhone. I think it's everywhere. But our region is not the worst, to talk about the global warming and the effect.
This is probably a difficult question, but I'm curious about the percentage of alcohol. I assume it does vary, but do you have some kind of an average in what the alcohol is of the whites that you produce, the percentage?
For the white, it's easier because, in the white, you don't have any tannin. So you can really decide about the alcohol level you want with the harvest date, So it's easier to harvest a little bit earlier with the white wine. So for the white, really, we always try to be between 13 and 13 and a half. I'm talking about my wines, between 13 to 13 and a half. Mm. White, 13, 13 and a half. Red, 14 to 15, and rosé will be in between white and red. But this is where we are today.
Interesting. Now, we're into 2024. We're coming up on February in a day. And obviously, we can't really talk about what's going to happen in 24 weather-wise, but how is your start to the year in winter in the Rhone Valley?
I have to say, in the Rhone, we are quite lucky because the 2023 has been a very dry year for many wine regions in France, like in Roussillon and some places in Languedoc. And I have to say that we have been lucky enough to get a lot of rain during November and December, and also January. So it's very important because at that time of the year, the water is really going deep into the soil. And the water we got during the past 3 months will be the reserve, the water supply of the vine for the next 6 months. So far, it's not bad. We have a few cold days, and the nights are always quite cold, even if the day are maybe a little bit too warm. But we cannot complain too much. We are in a good position to have a good flowering season and potentially a good 24 vintage. As you know, you never know until the end. We can have hail, we can have frost, we can have many things. But so far, I have to say, nature has been quite generous with us.
Do you ever experience snow in that area at all, other than in the mountains?
I'm living close to Avignon. Snow is, one year every 5 or 10 years. But, we are close from the Ventoux, so I can see the Ventoux from where I am. And the Ventoux, the top of the Ventoux, is white because of the snow. So the snow, finally, is not far away from us. Is maybe 20 or 25 miles from where I am, but we never get snow, in the land. We can get snow on the countryside and on the slopes, but not in the land. I was just checking the altitude of the Ventoux in feet. The Ventoux is 6,300 feet, to give you an idea. So we always get snow at this altitude, 6,300 feet. This is also in the earth of the Rhone Valley, so it's kind of incredible mountain.
I figured as much, but I was a bit curious about that. Now, before, we were talking about sourcing, and as I read, you're very strict about your sourcing. How do you determine where you're sourcing your grapes from? I mean, obviously, you try them from season to season, but does that change? Is it very consistent who you source from?
Yeah, the sourcing is... Normally, the sourcing, 90% of the sourcing remain stable. We work with the same partner from 1 year to the other because that allows us to have a better understanding of each other and to have more control on all stages. That means on the pruning, on the fertilization, on the picking day, on the winemaking methods. So the less producer we have, the better it is quality-wise. And of course, if we need to find some other producer, it has to be a good addition with a sourcing already existing. So most of the time, it's a question of choosing the right soil types to blend with the existing sourcing.
Now, I'm assuming you're probably in the part of the season where you've begun pruning, or is that already finished by now?
No, because with the risk of frost, we can have frost until early April. In 21, we have some frost on the 7th of April, and the vine was already growing. So the later you prune your vine, the later the vegetation start to grow again. So this year, from what I have seen driving my car, we were used to see most of the people pruning from late November, early December. And the first guy I have seen pruning the vineyard was just before Christmas. So definitely we try to postpone a little bit the pruning season. But now we are really in the heart of the season. So February until mid-March will be the peak pruning season.
And I imagine it's pretty cold out there pruning. So that's really some tough work.
Yeah, when it's not windy, it can be a nice day. But, you know, the Rhone Valley, we can have a lot of mistral, you know, this very dry wind which blows from north to south, and one day of pruning with a strong mistral is the worst day in your life, and it's not easy. The temperature is not that cold, but you feel, you know, like super cold because of the wind. So sure. I always say when I have some team complaining, you know, about the day, about what they do, I always say then, imagine if you were pruning this day 8 or 7 hours in the vineyard, you know, it will be another story. So normally they stop complaining, you know, after they think about people pruning.
I get that. Here in the States, there's been a little more difficulty selling wine to younger people. Is that something you're experiencing at all in France? I mean, obviously this is a national drink, but what's it like there?
No. We have exactly the same trend. The wine is still in France. We are still on a classic conception, which means drink with the meals. I know white wine for the aperitif or first course, red for the main course, and so on. And the tradition, you know, are changing, and the young generation, when I mean the 20, 25 years, 30 years people, they don't want to consume as we were doing. So red wine are really struggling. White are doing well because white is easier to consume white outside the meal. So wine is still making its way. But red wine, we have difficulty to find new moments to consume the wine. So it's we try to also to adapt the style of the wine to the young generation taste. So some of them maybe would prefer to drink red wine a little bit cool, or not to drink aged rosé. So we need also to be innovative. I'm not talking about the famous appellation, you know, Côte Rôti or Gevrey Chambertin. It's not an issue. The issue would be more for the entry level wine, say for the Côte du Rhône or for the Red Burgundy. We need also to adapt ourselves, but it's a difficulty in France and Europe to get new consumer start drinking wine.
Do you think rosé's made a major effect though on younger people drinking wine? It's more of a positive thing for them.
For the rosé, you mean?
Yes.
Rosé is difficult because rosé was supposed to be the color of the future. But rosé, from what we have seen in the past 10 years, is 1 year is the sales are booming, and the year after is going down. Mm. I think rosé is very dependent of the weather, about the trend, but it's not becoming you know, the new market of the wine. For me, I will bet more on the white wine potential, talking about the Rhone, than on the rosé, because the rosé, Provence, I think, is a leader, and in Languedoc, they have a lot of rosé. Many of them are less expensive than us, so we have rosé. We have some great Tavel. You know, Tavel is a fantastic cru. It's a 100% rosé appellation. We have Côte d'Or, we have the Ventoux. But I bet that we have more chance to grow in the white, in the Rhone Valley.
Interesting. Very good answer. Very specifically, you deal with media. You know, you certainly get interviewed plenty of times. You answer questions for people. What's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Maybe they don't ask us. Do you like this wine? I'm talking about one of our wine. Do you like this wine? And tell me why do you like it? You know why? And the why is very important, you know, because white wine is not how do you like it. Oh, I like it very much. No, this is not a question. Why do you like it? Tell me. I would like the customer and I would like also the media to be more curious about why are we doing this type of wine? Why do we harvest at that time of the year? Why do we use more Grenache, less Claret or Roussade? You know, all of these questions, because I think wine always reflects, you know, philosophy, reflects sense of place, reflects, you know, sensibility for things. And I would like to be more asked about why are we doing all of this effort, you know.
That's a very good answer. Thank you. Francois, I know you're on a tight time schedule this morning, but to the most important question for our listeners, how would they learn about you online? What is your website?
It's ogier.fr.
Very good. Francois, thank you for taking the time today. I appreciate your sneaking us in. Good luck for 2024.
It's a pleasure. It's a really pleasure.
Learn more by visiting ogier.fr. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2024.